Good morning. Thank you for coming. With me today is the chairman of the board, Jack Evans. He'll be up with me shortly after I finish my presentation. As you all know, for a number of years, if not decades, we've had been dealing with a number of maintenance and safety-related issues. And in my estimation, we need to do something different and dramatically different. And as most of you may know, it boils down to track access and all the demands that we have to get out there. On this slide, what you see is basically the amount of operating hours that we have, which is 85% of the time of a week. And when you look at what that works out to be in production time, it gives us about 10% of a normal 7 days to get out there and do work. When you think of just the normal maintenance that we have to do, and then you add on some of the things that we've had to do and should be doing either from FTA or NTSB or congressional mandates, clearly we cannot keep up with the demands that we need to do to get the system both safe and reliable that we all deserve. So that's the logic of this plan. So let me just give you a quick overview, and then I'll get into some of the more detail. This is a massive undertaking. There's no doubt about it. Internally we've been talking about it. It's like a military operation. There's a lot of moving parts that have to work together very well. The highlights are, we're calling it Safe Track. If you could go back, if you don't mind, Dan. But basically, we need to do things differently in terms of weekdays, in terms of early closures at 8 p.m. in certain locations when we need to do the work. We need to do different things on weekends. I'm recommending that we shut down the system at midnight all 7 days of the week, starting later in June, before we would do that. That we put a moratorium on any extended hours, either early in the morning or late into the evening. And then what we're doing is what we're calling safety surges. There are 15 locations, which I'll outline for you shortly, where we need to even put in more effort to get the work done, which will mean a longer duration of outages as we single track in some of those areas. The types of work elements that we'll be doing is, again, some of the things that you have all heard in different forms, but it's the tunnel lighting, it's the cabling, it's the signage, it's every part of the system. Let me just hit on the power cable issues, just so you know. On the power cable issue, by the end of this month, in the underground section, we will have all those replaced. That's the sleeves and the boots that we've been talking about. We will have the entire system done by the end of the summer. When we previously committed to that last year, it was to be by September 17. So we've moved that up a year, and that's been something, again, that I've been working on and the team's been working on for a number of weeks. So with that, some of the surges. Let me talk about the surges. This will require continuous track outages for longer periods. It's primarily above ground where we will do a number of this work. The issue here is we have to redo a number of the ties, and to redo the ties is not like replacing fasteners. You have heavy equipment out there, and what it takes to do that is very extensive. So that is what drives it. What that does, though, is it frees up capability to put more focus on some of the underground issues. These surge areas we cannot do in the process we've been following. We could not do that type of work in early outs and on weekends. And by default, what that means is we will have impact on rush hour service. So it will impact many riders. We will provide shuttle buses if we actually close down stations to provide bus bridges. But otherwise, it's reduced service, and we want to get the word out, and we will need the help of lots of people in the region to basically address this issue, whether it's through coordination with the various DOTs, whether it's working with HR departments in both businesses and government, and obviously communication throughout the entire process. Just to give you a sense of what we're doing here is we're maximizing productivity. So, for instance, if we go into a single tracking for 21 days straight, rather than closing, opening, and closing twice a day, where we, in effect, lose 3 hours every time we do that of productive work, we would take what would have taken 10 weekends, and we can complete it in 21 days. I'm going to show you a few examples of the type of work we'll be doing. This is the major cross-tie replacement I mentioned, and you can see the type of equipment that is required to do that work. Track renewal is literally taking out track and replacing it with new track, cutting it out, re-putting it, and re-welding it. This is cable replacement, the amount of effort it takes to do that. Joint elimination. One of the things that we have is we have a number of joints in the underground section that have very short power cables. We can eliminate a lot of those, which reduce the risk of those shorting out. Fastener replacement, very manual, as you can see the type of work that was required to do that. At the end of this program next year, what we will do is obviously we'll replace all the boots and seals, which I already spoke about. We will replace 12,000 insulators. We will eliminate all third rail expansion joints, or just about all the third rail expansion joints that we can in the underground system. We will eliminate temporary gauge bars. Gauge bars are basically bars that hold the track within the standards. That is a short-term Band-Aid that you should do for very short periods. Over time, we have been using that as a crutch and not more than a Band-Aid, and we have to eliminate that. We will be replacing 48,000 wooden ties. To give you a sense, we should be on a pace to do 11,000 per year. So we've got to catch up and then move forward and do 11,000 per year after that. The fasteners, same thing. We're going to replace 36,000 fasteners. We should be on an annual cycle of doing roughly 18,000. So we've got to catch up to do that. We will be clearing 87,000 linear feet of drains. A lot of our issues related to moisture. We have a drainage system out there that basically was designed to deal with that issue. But we have to maintain it, and we have to get in there and get that back again to a state of good repair so that it does what its job is. We will also do an extensive leak mitigation. Mitigation, I think, is the key word here because, we are in tunnels. We're under the water table. There will be leakage, but you have to stay on top of it and constantly repair it. So that's what we'll be doing in the next year. What this graph shows is basically this is a year look ahead. This is the program, the surge program, the 15 locations, basically showing where it gets impacted from a customer's perspective. So basically, if I get on at NOMA, when is my ride impacted? So that's what this chart will show our customers so that they can start to plan ahead. So just by example, what I'm saying here is there's a snowstorm coming. It's coming from August 7th through August 12th in this location. You need to start to think about it. The goal here was not to eliminate any service because basically we have customers that do not have an option. So we wanted to maintain service at a minimum. So it's in these surge locations, there will be either single tracking, and if we have to shut down a station, then basically we will have bus bridges around it so people can still make their trip by transit. Clearly, the level of service will go down during these surge periods. Let me just give you some examples. I'll give you three examples of them, and we will give you the entire list after the meeting, I believe. So one, and this happens to be the first one, which we're recommending to start June 4th through 19th. It's 15 days. It will be continuous single tracking between Franconia and Springfield and Van Dorn Street. This impacts roughly 18,000 weekday trips. The trains will move at a headway of 24 minutes. In one portion, 12 minutes another. In general, they're running at 6 minutes now. So you can obviously understand the impact. What we're showing in this graphic literally is where you see the red is obviously where there's significant drop in service. Where you don't see anything, then there is no drop in terms of the amount of service that's being provided out there. This is another example. This is the red line between NOMA and Fort Totten. This should look familiar to everyone. This is what we just went through last weekend with the CSX derailment. So this is that same operation where you're basically shutting down a portion of the system and having to bus bridge around it. This is probably the most serious impact in terms of customers being served at 108,000 passengers weekday trips in this section. So we will reduce the headways, and you can see those. We've outlined what those will be. A third example is between on the Orange and Silver between East Falls Church and Boston. Again, a major corridor with 73,000 work trips. Basically, we will basically be running trains every 18 minutes from Vienna to Boston, and the Silver Line every 18 minutes. again, we can provide extra service where we can, but this is the type of impact we will be having. One other initiative that we're doing is what we're calling early outs. Again, shutting down going to single tracking at 8 p.m. versus 10 or at midnight. We're closing down at midnight. And basically, we will do this on the red line from January 2nd to March 7th, 2017, with the one exception obviously being the inaugural, and we will keep the service at both tracks open the entire time. This will run from Friendship Heights to Medical Center, and those trains will be running every 15 to 20 minutes during that period. In terms of mitigation, most of the safety surges we have a fleet of 40 to 50 buses that we will apply as we move throughout the system in dealing with these issues. We will be providing A-car trains where we can. There, as you all may know, there's a power issue with that. You just can't run all A-car trains, but we will balance that and maximize A-car trains where we can. We will provide additional staff out as we move throughout the system in these areas to put people in front of people. We are requesting jurisdictions' input on the safety surges, particularly their help, whether it's traffic control, parking restrictions, bus support, HOV restrictions, whatever they can do to help us, whether it's just a variable message sign over a highway that says, guess what, in 2 weeks, this is what's coming to you, and be sure that you're aware that there's single tracking coming to the station near you. We will do a robust outreach effort, which this is the kickoff of that. We are requesting from OPM and the business community, and I've already spoken to the business community through particularly the Washington Board of Trade, to work with their members so they understand what's coming and they can and have some flexibility with their workers. And we will strategically position trains because things do occur in a normal day. So, for instance, if we have someone get sick on a train or a medical issue, we have to offload a train. We want to make sure that we have other trains available nearby that can deal with that and the personnel to deal with it as quickly as possible. So next steps, we want to coordinate with all the local jurisdictions and all the stakeholders, the business community, the federal government. The final version for the customers, we want ready by May 16th. So basically we're giving 10 days to work with different people, understand some of their issues, and get it out there in final form. We're looking to start this June 4th, as I've mentioned. One thing that I think is different, or one thing that I'm doing, is I will be having independent verification of the work that's being done, that it's being done correctly, and is recorded that way. So I'll be doing that with my own internal forces, and obviously FTA has been very engaged in all of our inspections. So that will be ongoing. The other part which I will be doing is we then will start the ongoing maintenance schedule, and then we will have an independent group in my shop, that report directly to me, that will be verifying that we are doing that periodic maintenance as determined or as needed, and to verify that work is being done so we don't slip back into some of the conditions we've been in. One thing I do want to make clear, this system will never be new again. This is the effort to get us to a stage where we are doing constant maintenance. It is not, there's lots of other issues I have to deal with. I understand, for instance, lighting in stations and all kinds of other issues. Those are other initiatives that I will be doing, but this is focused on the safety and reliability. And I also just want to, end before I open up to any questions or open it to the chairman to make any comments. We are starting today, particularly with the interaction I've been having with both the Secretary of USDOT and FTA. There are issues that need to be addressed immediately. So we did last night, and we will continue to do that. One of the things that we're doing, we will be rolling out, in effect, we're going to start 8 a.m. Closings or single tracking in a number of areas where I've got to get in and do significant work, safety-related work particularly, and I will be doing that now, not waiting until May 16th or June 4th, just so everyone understands, this is the moving the 3 years to 1 year, but that does not mean I don't have issues that I've got to jump on right now, and I'm jumping on those right now, so just so you understand that. So with that, I'll turn it over to the chairman.
Okay, thank you very much, Paul. Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. And first, I want to take this opportunity to thank Paul for putting forward a very aggressive plan to address many of the safety and reliability issues we are experiencing here at Metro. Paul had an opportunity a half hour ago, 10:30, to address the board, and I'm pleased to say that the board is behind Paul and this plan and implementing it. On behalf of myself, I want to say this. We cannot continue as we are. We all know that. The incident last night, the four incidences on the red line in 10 days, and on and on and on. We have tried to prepare the public over the last several months that we will be coming forward, and we have, with a very aggressive plan to try and fix Metro. And Paul's plan does just that. We are asking all of the stakeholders in Metro, the elected officials, the appointed officials, the business community, and most importantly, our riders, our customers, to bear with us. This is going to be inconvenient. It's going to be more inconvenient than it is now. There will be a lot of struggling to get this right. We are going to work with the jurisdictions, the District, Maryland, and Virginia, to try and minimize the inconvenience, but knowing it is going to be there. So we are asking everyone to stick with us, because as you've heard me say many times, we are all Metro. This is all our system. And this is the unique opportunity that we now have to bring our system back to where it is reliable and safe. Safe and reliable, the two words we hear all the time. And so we look forward to working with everybody as we go forward, implementing this plan and making Metro, again, the world-class system we know it can be. So we're excited about this, but we know there are enormous challenges ahead. And so, again, I want to thank our general manager, Paul Riedefeld, for coming forward with an aggressive plan, something that is going to really move forward in trying to get Metro back to where it should be. So thank you, Paul, and we're welcome to take any questions.
Paul, how much is it going to cost, and where are you going to find that
money? Yes, there's two issues on the cost side. One is these dollars were programmed because they were out two years into the future. So we're going to bring those dollars in. So obviously we have to put it in this upcoming budget. So that's where the dollars are. We have to do that. We can use debt as part of that issue. And then basically I know we're going to pick up a lot of productivity. So we'll save dollars by doing it this way. So that's on that side. And the other side is the operating side, the loss of revenue, obviously, that we could be facing. I don't know what that is now, you know, because we'll have to see how people adjust their travel behaviors, whether they use bus, whether they use other lines, those types of things. So what we'll be doing is we'll be working with the board. We do quarterly updates on our financials, both on operating capital, and we will continue to basically bring that to the board and making those decisions as we go along. It's right now, we don't know yet, to be honest with you. I do not have a number yet on that. In the billions? No, I do not believe so. I've shaped this plan based on the service, the safety of the customers, and building the reliability. So the reliability, I think, gets at bringing customers back. The safety is something I have to do, and I'm going to do it. And I can't make that decision based on the inconvenience it may apply to someone on their trip. I understand that inconvenience, but I understand more of their safety on the trip. So that's what I'm focusing on. I think so. In my discussions across the region, that's the desire, is they want the system back to where it is reliable, and they want to feel safe. And I think that will drive the numbers. So that is my focus.
Can you take part in the
Yeah, I mean, across the board. I mean, Baltimore's ready to do the same thing this summer. They're doing one the upcoming holiday for some light rail and subway. But one thing that is a little different in some of these other systems, they tended to be dealing with specific segments that just had a issue, you know, a bridge, a tunnel, whatever, or a very small section of the tunnel. Ours are system-wide. So that's why you see when you saw those surges, they're all over. It's not like, okay, I just got to fix this one portion and we got to shut it down for several months and be done with it. That's not what we're up against here. So it's a little different, but I think, yeah, what the experience in the transit industry has been is people get it. They understand that things get old and you got to fix them. Get them fixed as quickly as you can, get out of the way, and let them get back to a normal life. There are five. Let me just make sure we're clear on this. There are we are single tracking the majority of the 15 surge areas. I believe there's five shutdowns where we're shutting down stations and we'll have to do bus bridges around them. Yes. We will give you all the details on those. So you have them all, so I don't misspeak. Again, it's from two levels. We have resources internally, and I'm using consulting resources for that. The FTA obviously has their people here. In fact, I was speaking to them last night, and I've asked them if they have other consultant resources, either that they can bring to bear or that we could bring in to help us do that. So we have people that will be doing that to make sure that the work is done as properly. No, I'm not. What I'm asking for them to do is understand what the challenge is, and I think they do get it. And the people that I've spoken to, and I think the NTSB basically said, look, this has been going on for decades. So I think what the message to the customer is, we have to do this. This is not something that we can keep kicking down the road. We have to do this. So I'm not asking for patience from that perspective. I am asking for understanding of what we're up against and what it's going to take to get there.
Just a redirect to follow up. What I'm trying to get here is, sure. The NTSB has made this point that these agencies failed at safety for a long time. Fixing the system helps reliability and hopefully prevent some of those issues. But the safety culture has been faulted by the NTSB almost from day one in Metro. How do you fix that so these big incidents, these big failures that cost lives don't happen?
Sure. I'm hitting that on a number of fronts. First and foremost, it starts with me, and to make decisions based on safety and not necessarily some of the other pressures that we're under. And I think you've seen that already in some of the action I've taken, and I think this is reflected today. This is permeating throughout the entire culture. I hear from my frontline employees that they're saying, okay, we get it. There's someone that is trying to come at it from that perspective, so they're very supportive from that from that effort. I, as you may know, I just did hire a new safety chief safety operating officer. Comes in with a whole different set of skills, and the expectations for that office are totally different than what have been set for them in the past. No, because I think we're still providing the base service. I mean, I think people have to make choices, but I mean, we have to continue to provide the service, just like it's different as every day. Yes, ma'am. Sure. OPM, we're dealing with them right now. In fact, some calls were made earlier today with them, so we'll continue to work with them over the next few weeks. And again, what's a plus of this plan is it's not like when I had to deal with the situation a month ago where it's, immediately we got to shut down. We've laid out for the next year so we can all step back and say, all right, we got to deal with this issue in early June, but then, it just progressively goes down and we start to manage it that way. So I think it's much more manageable that way. In terms of FTA, I mean, clearly, they are playing the role that they're playing until the Safety Commission gets stood up here in this region. And we'll continue to work with them. They'll continue to do the inspections. We will continue to immediately address issues that they see and we see. So we'll continue to do that. That doesn't go away because of this. that just this is another effort to basically get at some of the core issues, but we have immediate issues that we have to deal with, and we'll continue to work with them to do that. No, the service does not shut down on midnight until June 3rd or 4th, the 3rd. Yeah. I'm sorry? This is, again, a draft plan that I'm recommending.
Wait, I don't know the answer to that. Is there any of our lawyers know the answer to that?
No. Okay. It's a proposal. It's a proposal. Yeah, we'll find out. We'll see. Yeah. Exactly. That's a really good point. We don't want to lose sight of. Basically, everything that we've been doing, you know, some of the weekend closures, some of the early outs, we're actually going to step that up. And that's what I mentioned, these early outs at 8 p.m. Apparently, years ago, we used to do 8 p.m., then we started to move back to 10, and then we sort of eliminated some of them. So we have to reinstate that. And that's to get at some of the basic issues that we continue to have to address, to get those, and also to start the regular maintenance. That's when you should be doing regular maintenance, is when you're closed down, right? During, you know, midnight to 5. That's when that, so that cycle's got to start. The surge is like, now let's bring this up to that same level, and then let's do the whole system that way continuing into the future. No, that's right. That's what I'm saying. Those are issues I'm dealing with immediately, you know. Well, yes and no. They have been replaced over time. The insulators that we're talking about, the porcelain insulators, which are the older insulators, so those have to be replaced. So I've got to get those as quick as I can. So that's probably different. I didn't say that. What I said was I'm maintaining service. I'm not trying to eliminate service anywhere so that anyone that does not have access to transit would not be able to travel. Okay, so I must have misheard you. Yeah, I think what my analogy is, you know, we've been shoveling out sand this side, but the sand's been coming in the other side just as quick. Because we haven't given ourselves the amount of time we need to get the job done correctly and set it up, and then we haven't set in the mechanisms to inspect what we do, and we haven't set in the mechanisms to constantly monitor that we're maintaining it. So I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do it very publicly, that this is what we're doing, so everyone can see that we are doing that. I don't know what was in the past, but I just know that, you know, the condition that we're dealing with is not where we should be. Okay, sorry. No, again, we're maintaining the service levels that we're maintaining transit in all the entire system. That's what we're doing. Yes. Again, I think that's been documented in lots of areas. That, well, I'm just saying it's been talked about for years that there's been this deferred maintenance, and for lots of reasons that hasn't been applied. But you know, I cannot go on this way, and I don't think any customer wants us to continue this process where the service is unreliable, unsafe, because we're not doing the basics, and that's what we're doing. I'm sorry?
You're not closing.
No, we are. There's five locations where we'll be closing some locations, and we'll provide you all the detail shortly. We're going to work with them to see if there's anything along those lines they can do across the board. Right. But I think we all have to take a look at it because, I mean, you may be talking about an area that's for 7 days. So, you know, they got to make a judgment, you know, what impact could they have in that? You know, it's happening in some of these. It depends where it happens in the year. You know, there's all kinds of variables, I think, that we all have to look at. So, and that's what we want to make sure that we're working with them. Again, if they have what they may have, for instance, they may have a resurfacing roadway project that is, say, okay, well, we can now push that back a week or move it up a week so we don't conflict with that. So it's those types of discussions we want to have with the local jurisdictions.
What do you think is to update the riders? I mean, you've been very transparent.
Right. I'm up on the board right now, sort of the whole public outreach. But basically, we have to do a whole lot better. But we've got to get, again, it's not just us. You know, we've got to get the business community to make sure that they're putting it out to their employees, local jurisdictions. Clearly, I will use the media and the chairman will to make sure we're constantly out there. Website, please get on our, our web, you know, or a notification system so that you have that for your particular part of the system. So all those, you know, all those things we will do. And we'll be creating on our website a ongoing status where we are, both in terms of what's coming and physically what's being done, so they can see what's being done, so they can keep up.
You said quite a lot about the safety of the systems. There are people that are concerned that you can't go a week without an arcing insulator, fire, smoke incident, or other disruptions in service. You hear the NTSB talk about how there's been a lack of safety culture for years. What do you say to riders today about how safe they are in their community on time?
Again, if I feel that the system is unsafe, then I will take the actions to make it safe. And I've done that already, and I will continue to do that. Let me just hit on arcing insulators. Arcing insulators happen throughout the entire industry. That, you know, when we're done this or anyone does whatever they do, you will still have that in the system just like every other system does in the country. So, I think we got to get out of this, you know, that anything that happens, it's, you know, it's DEFCON 4. That's not what we, you know, that's not always where we are. But I am not. If there's any situation that is serious, then I immediately will deal with it, which I have been doing. It's a draft. We're looking to finalize it by May 16th. Anybody else that has an ask one? I'm sorry. Yes, sir. Right. No, it cannot be done just with internal staff. So we basically have to we will pick up a lot of productivity because of the way we're applying our resources. But we will have to use outside contractors. We'll have to use overtime.
Right. Okay. General Manager in the early 90s, he said the decision to extend the late night service was a disaster. Would you consider permanently ending 3 a.m. service because of the Ubers and the Lyfts of the world?
It's too early to make that call. I do know that 5 years ago, we moved roughly 5,000 people per hour between the 12 a.m. and 3 a.m. time period. We're now down to about 2,500 people per hour. So, I mean, you know, just there's something obviously going on there. So thank you very much.
Sure. It's a good question. Again, we have a crisis situation. Paul has put out a plan to deal with that, and it's not only going to be the bar owners, it's going to be a lot of different interests at different points in time that I don't know right now that will say, this is going to impact me. And it's going to be unfortunate. There are going to be inconveniences, but these are the decisions that we have to make if we're going to get the system to where we want it. Again, Paul stressed it, and I will too. It needs to be safe. It needs to be reliable. And there's going to be a lot of inconvenience for us to get to that point. Yes, because I believe that Paul believes that it is necessary for us to get the term of art we use, track time. We need track time. We need to be able to get into the system and fix it. And there are going to be a lot of different interests that are impacted by that. And so the late night service, at least at this point in time, is one of those interests that's going to be impacted for us to get this fixed. And in answer to your earlier question, when we make the system, again, reliable and safe, people will come back to it. It is a congested area in which we live that is only going to get more congested. We are predicting that 1 million people will be living in the District of Columbia in 2030 or 2040, whenever that is. There has to be a way to get around it. It's not driving. And so bikes work, you know, the other mechanisms work. But there's no better way than public transportation and metro when it works, when it's reliable. And I believe people will come back in droves when we make it reliable and safe. And my other admonitions, public transportation only works when it's convenient and affordable. Convenient and affordable. So we have to work on those issues out into the future. How do we have a fare system that makes sense? How do we pay for all of this? So I'm going to make a plug once again. Three things. We need my $300 million from Congress. We need a dedicated funding source. And we have to lift the restricted drawdown on our capital funds. We need those three things critically, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but for the future of Metro. So I don't want to miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity to say that. And so I'll take one more question, and then we'll be out of there.
When this year is done,
yes. I would leave that up to Paul, but I believe the plan he has put out there will get us to that point that it is going to be reliable and safe, and that's what we support. Reliable and safe, yes. Well, we haven't even discussed that, so I don't have any information on what we're going to do in fares. I'm talking more of the general idea. Yeah, well, those are all issues that we'll have to take up with the board in the due time. So, again, thank you all very much.